Jill Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology, or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Jill.
Hello.
Talk to us about yellow birch.
Yeah. Has anybody been out enjoying the colors?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Me too, in every little opportunity that comes along. And I had some field work, luckily, to do that took me out into some maple-dominated forest at one point in the not-too-distant past. And the colors were happening. And it reminded me of just how much I appreciate the yellow birch at this time of year, because they're often kind of behind the maples in terms of turning color. And everybody's got their own preference on this, I'm sure, but I kind of like my colors with still some green in the mix. And so I can really count on the yellow birch, if they're there, to be part of that. And because they can get to be quite majestic trees, they often add a big blob of their beautiful green in the mix of all those party-colored maple leaves.
So the red maples and the yellow aspen.
Yeah, aspen. They won't typically be with aspen, but with the maples, the yellow birch will be in there. They are one of our three native birches that grow here in northeastern Minnesota. So one is the one that I imagine everyone is familiar with. That's the paper birch. Another is the heart-leaved birch, which is probably the one that's least familiar to people. And then the third is the yellow birch. And of those three species, paper birch, white birch is, of course, the most ubiquitous, kind of. The other two are much less common. And of the three, yellow birch is far and away the most majestic of the three species we have, and the longest lived of the three. So this is a species that is right up there with our longest living trees. 350, 400 years have been documented in parts of the North Shore Highlands of our yellow birch trees. They get to be very large, some up approaching 80 or more feet tall, which for our part of the world is pretty tall, and sometimes with very large crowns. They also, as I said, get to be very old and thus can grow to a really significant diameter. So there are trees that are over 3 feet in diameter of this particular birch species, which is, again, also even compared to all of the trees we have here, those are large trees both in terms of height and girth. And because they live so long, they are long-term contributors to the forest communities that they're part of. They often have very dramatically shaped crowns because of the length of time that they live. They'll be affected by all kinds of things over the course of that kind of lifetime. And so they often become a spreading crown at a fairly low height, so maybe within 30 feet or so of the ground. Then they get all these branches and they grow in very contorted directions and shapes, and then parts will die and break off, and so they all get.
So they're not a symmetrical.
No, usually not. Not if they're an old tree. They're quite interesting to look at, I think, just structurally. They also have a really distinctive bark that helps in identifying them. So they have a metallic sheen to their bark. And on an old tree, you're not going to easily see that down on the trunk of the tree, because the bark, like on most of our trees, really changes as you age. But if you look up into the branches, even of those old trees, into the younger parts of the tree, then you're going to see that metallic sheen on the bark. The bark color has a range to my eyes, and we all see these color things a little differently, but it's a kind of a golden, tawny, bronzy, some people say gray even. Some trees don't really seem to develop that yellowish gold aspect all that much. It's more of a gray. May have something to do with how much light is hitting the bark. I'm not sure, but so it's a range. But this metallic sheen is very characteristic, as is the fact that, like all the birch, the bark is shed, so it splits and sheds that as the tree grows. And in the case of yellow birch, it's like carpenter shavings from a plane or something. So it gets
it
a
curls.
Really, yeah, it curls. It gets a really fringe kind of look, or shaggy look to the tree trunk or the branches or wherever, but especially anything that's been out and exposed part of the tree for a while, it'll have this very shaggy look that paper birch doesn't get except for in much bigger pieces typically. So, or heartleaf birch, they tend to shed in larger pieces, although heartleaf birch, I would say, is kind of in between the two. So in terms of the leaves are very oval in outline. They have highly serrated edges, double serrations, actually. It's very coarse around the margin. To my way of thinking and seeing, this is one of the birches where the tips taper a little bit more. It's not such an abrupt coming to a point. It tapers a little bit, but very pointed at the far end. And if you're really in doubt and you have any kind of little branch or twig or something close by, or one that just fell on the ground recently or whatever, if you scrape that and take a good long sniff, you're going to smell the smell of wintergreen. And that's the only birch that you would smell that from here. And in fact, the other day when I was out, I was going along and all of a sudden that aroma, fragrance, was in the air around me. And I didn't have time to really check it all out, but I'm guessing that there had been some damage to a branch or something, you know, that was still kind of weeping, or and you know, was enough to, on a still day, to kind of fill the air with that wonderful fragrance. Oh. Right around the tree anyway. So as I said, they're beautiful in many ways and contributing to our communities in many ways. They are a tree that occurs in quite a few different kinds of habitats, but never in great numbers anywhere. So they're usually either scattered individuals, like out in the Mape forests, or even up in the boundary waters. You'll see them occasionally here in riparian, so streamside settings. And then they also occur sometimes in our maple forests in groves with white cedar. We've talked before about how our maple forests are dominated by sugar maple, sometimes with red maple, and how sugar maples really rule. They have lots of adaptations that really suppress the success of other species. So if you're going to be part of the mix, you have to be an opportunist of sorts. And that's the case with yellow birch. And the way they manage it is to be able to take advantage. They don't need mineral soil for their seeds to get established, which would be the case, say, of paper birch. So a paper birch would need a tip-up mound with a big wad of soil to find a seed to land there and to get established. If it lands out in the leaf litter, not happening. So yellow birch might do that, but is much more likely to show up on the top of a boulder that maybe has a little mossy mat on it, or even more commonly, on a nurse log. So we've talked before about how important coarse woody debris is, especially large diameter coarse woody debris is to these communities in many ways, and this is one of them. Trees like yellow birch use these decaying logs as their nurse logs. Seeds land there, they get established there, they grow around, their roots grow around the outside and down through eventually once it's decayed enough to get into the earth below, and the log just rots out from under them. And so oftentimes even some of these very large trees look like they're on stilts because wherever they started is long gone. It's not unusual or unlikely to see them kind of in a line because of that very reason.
That nurse log.
Yes, because of that nurse log phenomena. So that's one way that forest ecologists can go out and look at the conditions that have prevailed someplace and determine, well, what kind of lengths of time are we talking about? Well, if I've just cored a tree and it's 300 years old and it's growing with trees of maybe not just that age, but other ages, but older, and they're all on stilts, and they're all kind of in a linear fashion, well, then that tells me that there was big coarse woody debris happening in this community that long ago, at a minimum. So the trees help us understand the long-term dynamics of processes that are a part of the communities. Those are wonderful clues to have about how these places function together. So since they're opportunists and they have to take advantage of things where they do occur in this more scattered kind of in small area way. And since they take so long to mature, we don't see big old trees just everywhere. here in our forests also, there was selective cutting of these trees along with spruce in the 40s and 50s. So this is one of the most valuable hardwood species for furniture making. And while it's not cut hardly at all anymore here, during that period of time in northeastern Minnesota here, that was part of how they, you know, made their way as contract loggers or peace loggers. They would go into the woods and look for these trees. So we lost some of our seed source there. So in terms of taking advantage of the opportunities that are out there of one kind or another, that's been diminished in that way. But this is a species that's a focus of forest restoration in this area because it's a species that could do okay with a changing climate. But it likes coolness. It's not a species you're going to find out in places that get really warm and likes cooler, more temperate kind of situations. Yeah, so they're out there to be appreciated, and this is a good time to do it.
Jill Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thank you for talking to us about yellow birch today.
Very welcome.